信で、まあ、総主性論語、いや、まず、あ、論語、まず論主性で主は誰性論語、あのストレス論語、どうせ、I don't know what it means. I was just told I must do that, so I'm doing what I was told. Tata, we have shortlisted you out of the 143 people that were nominated. It was a difficult task, as you might know. What becomes even much more difficult is for us to trim down this number to 12. So you must just talk to your CV that you have gone through and tell us what else you want us to know, whatever else you want to, you talk to your CV. And secondly, just to try and help us to make a decision now as to just to include you in the 12. That's your call, sir. And then after that, you will fill some questions. And then we hope that you'll be out of here before 3. 3 o'clock at the most. Over to you, Mr. Mtind. You're not new to those things, so I don't have to do a lot of things. Thank you very much. Good.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, honorable members. It's a difficult task when you have to explain yourself to people who know you. But I will try. I come from the rural village of Mvenyane in the Alfred Nzo District Municipality. But I reside in Johannesburg for work purposes. And I have a mix of that rural life and urban. I studied my secondary education in the Alfred Nzo District, and my university life was both in Gauteng and Western Cape. I graduated in science degree and also postgraduate diploma in telecommunications and information policy. My work experience ranges from being at the cold front of starting community radio stations and graduating into running establishing and running the forum that represent community radio stations countrywide. But then from 1998, this committee then changed my life and made me a regulator, until when we merged with SADRA, and then I crossed the floor to the ministry. In 2002, I crossed the floor back to ICASA, and now I am at the MDDA after finishing my term, my second term. And I have been nominated by virtue of my expertise and experience to serve in this board, the SABC board, with the experience of having been outside protesting, campaigning for transforming the SABC in the late 1980s, early 1990s, and then having been a regulator and also having been also responsible for the broadcast, the broadcaster from a policy perspective and also the ministry, and having been central in the licensing, the relicensing of the SABC, people then felt that probably the right expertise and experience to be able to then now oversee the implementation of all that work. So against that background, then I accepted the nomination and hope to add that value to the board with that range of experience from having been at the call front and also having been responsible for regulation and policy, now is probably the right time to be able to ensure that the SABC complies with the charter, with license conditions, and the legislative framework at large.
No, sir, thank you very much. We've got you, was with the council, we've got Ms. Bulbulia, we've got Mamushala Midupi, Mamudupi Mushala. We are also going to interview. If we forgot to take one out of the three, who should we take? From him. From him. Yeah.
We're three different people, Chakasin, and perhaps myself and Bulbulia kind of have more years of experience in the broadcasting industry, and then Ms. Mushala joined the regulator 2002. So maybe she's one of the new blood. It depends on whether you want new blood or you want or you want institutional memory. But on my side, I think my value is wide range in terms of the different experiences that I have, and also having been with the processes of changing the then state broadcaster to what we want it to be, which is probably what the legislative framework and the regulatory framework impose in terms of what SABC should be doing. So in that regard, that's the value I would add. My former colleagues, I think they would be able to articulate their own value add themselves.
No, I'm asking this deliberately because your collective strength, the three of you, you know, have got that knowledge that comes from licensing the SABC and as regulators. Obviously, there is tension as well, where ICASA wouldn't want you to do their job. They want to also do their own work there. So I'm just taking all this into account. I did not ask Ms. Bulbulia this question. But as I was going through the OCV and the others, I started to ask myself the question. So I don't have an answer. That's why I'm asking you to assist me. Now you narrow it down to two. Let's accept that scenario for now. It's between yourself and Ms. Bulbulia. And it's a man and a woman. You must also take that into account. Don't answer that now. Just think about it and answer at the end. Mr. Peterson.
Chairperson, I think Mr. Mutinde is what Mr. Rumalo would refer to as SRB. You can see, I can see it's a farm. You know, being the city, you know, you can take him from the farm to the city. But that wonderful part of from a farm, a rural area, always remain with him. I can also just... apparently, he's also a newly wet person, so new, you still smell it. A month or so married, so he's also under pressure at home and here. Chairperson, I think many of us, I think all of us know Mr. Mdimle extremely well. His capabilities and such, all of us. My question is rather, there's another person we still need to introduce, Mr. Mkonza, coming from the, also from the MDEA. I'm just thinking aloud, being a CEO there, can we really afford to have two people from the same institution and full-time positions? You know, I'm not necessarily arguing whether there's a conflict of interest, so I haven't even gone that far. But can we really afford to have two people as if you're supposed to drive that vehicle full time also given the challenges that SBC encounters today, would they be able to pull their weight full time as we expected? So I think I'll ask you a question.
I'm going to ask along the, exactly the way you started off, I thought was so interesting. Because if we have a similar thing with the ex-regulator, and Libby Lloyd is also an ex-regulator, and then we have the even more immediate situation with MDDA. Aren't there in fact four? I wanted to ask Lumko to think through, think aloud for us. I mean, is there any problem? It's Kanye Mkhwanza, is it himself? Libby is his predecessor. There's a fourth one with MDDA links. Am I wrong? Is there any kind of a problem? If you think that we license broadcasters in the commercial, the public, and the community sphere, I know there's an old view on your side, really, rather than ours, that community stations are almost like an extension of public broadcasting. But is there, Randy asks you about one problem, I'm adding a further one. Is there any kind of a structural problem? You clearly think not, since you're here, but won't you kind of think it through out loud for us, Lumko?
Maybe let me just start with the latter one. I think my answer being no would probably be informed by the not necessarily in terms of my current role and being here, but more in terms of if you look back in terms of vision that led to this kind of structure. As a threat here, I think there is clearly defined differentiation between the three categories, which therefore differentiate the community one from even the public, both legally and in terms of the imperatives at the programming level. And then the MDDA role is not presenting a structural problem for me, because I think it is an agent, kind of an agent of change, agent intended to encourage this very change that we need in the media landscape. Whereas supporting community radio and small commercial, community media and small commercial media is one of its programs, but it's not necessarily the only mandate. The mandate is broadly to encourage and promote media development and diversity, which probably that's why you'd find people who have been behind the transformation of the media and broadcasting landscape in the country, one way or the other, they would be people within these circles, whether MDDA circles or within the regulatory circles or policy-making circles, because I think the transformation is still new. We just 11, 12 years into this change, and you therefore find still a few people who still come from right through the beginnings of this process. In terms of another member Randy's question, I again don't foresee a problem. You correctly say there's no conflict. But I think in terms of the diversity consideration that surely you need to ensure when you appoint the board, I think we do present a diverse background. Ms. Mkhwanza and myself, and therefore, in that regard, one would think that there inevitably, because, for example, she hasn't been through policy and regulation. She has been through the sector and the public broadcaster. I have these other experiences. So we are different in terms of the angels are coming from. And I don't therefore foresee us singing the same song in the SABC board. I think we would still be two different people with two different perspectives, depending on the issues that would be at hand during such deliberations at board level.
Thank you, Mr. Swart. And then, can I just double-check Ms. Smart, you covered? We'll get another round after Mr. Mshama. Mr. Swart.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Mtunde. There's one thing clear for me, and that is that I shouldn't be afraid that you would not understand the structures and the setup if appointed. I mean, if the background and expertise is fine in terms of understanding the whole concept of communications and broadcasting and so on. Just clarification question quickly. If you look at your CV organizational experience, I presume when you were involved with the Tertiary Institution Sport Congress was in 85 and to 89, not 95 to 99.
Yeah.
It was in the 80s, not in the 90s.
Yeah.
So that's why I got it here. It was also very interesting for me to look at your initial qualifications and your work as laboratory assistant. Lisa, I look at this and I came to 94 and I see this change and then I look back at where you were involved in organizations and I saw, well, from the 80s already, in particular from 91, the Bush reign and so on. So you always have this dual, even in your, when you were visual science academics, you have this other thing. What I want to ask from you, and that's why I made that initial remark about you understand what this is. You were a member of ICASA, the council, up to 2006. There were a lot of problems at ICASA, as far as this committee is concerned, in those periods. So you know there are problems in boards and problems in organizations. Now, it is my opinion that there's major problems in the SABC at the moment. And we can spend time debating if it's serious or not serious, or if it's perceptions by the public, of course, by the media, what is the case in this? I'm concerned there are major problems. Now, coming from that ICASA background, with your expertise, your vast involvement in various things, currently as well as previously, can you give me a pretty short analysis of what you see, or what you perceive as the problems in the SABC, and I'll talk about from the board all the way down, and what you, with your background, and who you are, can and will bring to the SABC board to address these, and how would you address that?
Thanks, Honourable Member. I suppose maybe the premise would be, In any environment, there would be challenges, there would be different degrees, and one would therefore say perhaps from that premise, one would accept that yes, there appears to be challenges at SABC at the moment, but I do not have the authority to be able to say these are the degrees of the challenges, because I'm not directly there. But from where I am, I see the challenges ranging from the repositioning of the SABC from what it was prior to the effect of the new license conditions. The challenge in that regard is that of, to what extent will the conditions, the terms and conditions we imposed on the SABC, to what extent will they have an impact on the running and the viability of the SABC? I think that's one challenge, which I think SABC is now working through that transition, and where I'm sitting, I see them having actually realized fruits of the new license terms and conditions in terms of listenership and viewership. It has grown. So the balance, therefore, in that regard would be, to what extent is that growth balanced by the needed financial input to be able to then sustain it going forward, which then takes one to perhaps the other challenge of SABC, which is the funding model, which I think that this house is the one which would need to assist in terms of that discussion going forward. But my personal view is that for a public broadcaster to be able to successfully operate as a public broadcaster, it does need public funds. And in South Africa, we've got a better legislative framework in terms of safeguards, that public funding does not equal to state control. I think in law that is very clear. And therefore, I would argue that perhaps we need to reconsider the funding model and strike some balance so that there is a reasonable input from the public purse in order to ensure that SABC doesn't, even with the license conditions that I'm personally proud of, because I think we went through quite rigorous processes to come to an understanding of what the SABC should do through those license terms and conditions. But they need to be supported through some public funding in order to be able to manage what we expect from them. Then at management and governance level, of course, we read a lot about what's happening there. To be able to judge that, one would need to get the merits and demerits of the particular cases, and surely it's impossible to do that through this exercise. But broadly, I think we need to understand the context. We only in 1999 came with a clearer charter for public broadcaster, out of which we imposed some requirements, i.e. that they need to translate that into some policies for public service and broadcasting, ranging from programming policies, and they are listed in the Broadcasting Act. And I think they worked that part in 2005, and we now have that set of policies which never existed, and I think the public input into those policies was also quite very interesting. It proved that the public is interested in a public broadcaster. And now they are, after that, of course, it was the licenses which came into effect just early last year. So now they're settling and trying to focus and run the business. They've had change management, but Advocate Mpofu is not that old. They are thinking about 2 years. So there would be challenges that would be that would relate to change management, where you inherit a team and then you have to work with that team. So obviously you need to settle, find your feet, but also you have your principals that you need to get to work closely with. So surely in that kind of a context, there would be challenges there and there. But I don't think they are unmanageable. I think SABC, it appears to be doing well, at least as a broadcaster. And you can measure that in terms of the content, the listenership and the viewership. I think we can all agree that there is quite a lot of improvement and they are doing well. Financially, I think they still struggle in terms of the balance, given the model they operate under. these are the challenges. We can find answers from the policy framework that exists. For example, if you're talking to the allegations that would be in the press in terms of editorial independence, I think the policies are quite clear, the SABC policies in terms of the promotion of creativity and programming independence. I think the policies are quite clear, so it's a question of then finding answers to challenges that you have through the framework that already exists, which I think it's a good framework. And therefore, to answer then your latter part of your question, with the value add that one would bring from my experience in terms of meeting, in terms of trying to find resolve in such challenges, it's always best to look back, what does our legislative framework provide, and of course policy and regulation, and analyze therefore the challenge within that context. At least it gives a guidance so that you don't degenerate into another level of dealing with individuals, whereas the framework would have provided you answers. So that's at least what I've, from when I joined IBA, which was at the time quite in challenging times. Those of you who were here at the time, I think Honorable Member Smart would remember, we came in to meet those kind of challenges, and I think we were able to take it from there to the level where it was when we met with SATRA. And we were able to also, through ICASA, or Grand ICASA mostly, we began to have challenges towards the last term of our offices. And perhaps those were also informed by different contexts. There was a change that was beginning to come in place. This committee is aware of the outcomes of those legislative changes, and the today's report. And I'm not dealing with the status of the report, but the outcome, the content of the report from the task team of Honorable Member Asma, begin to talk to some of the challenges that we were facing that led to some of the challenges that we were having. So for me, it's that ability to understand the context, locate a challenge within a context, and then try and resolve the challenge.
If you are going to answer short questions and give long answers, we're going to keep you under four. No problem. It's up to you. We wanted to keep you until 3 o'clock, but
I'll be sharp.
If you take long to answer questions, we easy. But thanks, Mr. Mtlalo.
I just want to pick up from the question raised by Honorable Swart, that both ICASA and SABC are governed by the PFMA. And when, in your last year, financial year, when you left ICASA, ICASA had received a qualified audit opinion. And in both instances, I suppose, part of the mandate of the Council, and in the instance of the SABC, PFMA remains a guide, and therefore members of the Board also have fiduciary responsibilities. So I'm saying, in the context of that question, the three councillors that have left ICASA, when they left it, for the first time it got a qualified audit opinion. So What confidence then should we have that you had nothing to do with those weaknesses? Therefore, the same weaknesses will not be transmitted into the SABC. The second is about the fact that as a CEO of MDDA, you're concerned about diversity and so on, and issues of community broadcasting, either radio or TV, come into the center stage. Now, don't you think that there will be a variance of interest if you were to sit in the board of the SABC, which SABC is also concerned about revenue streams? And of course, as a board member, you've got to be concerned about, you know, issues of revenues and so on. Which therefore means that there would be some kind of competitive activities between the public broadcaster, given its commercial activities, and the community broadcasters. And how do you think that you will deal with that, that situation?
Thanks. I'll try and control the passion that one has, that after so many years that tend to then preoccupy in answering the questions. But they seem to be questions that require a long answer, like the first question should have been, but I'll try and be short. I think my record would speak for itself in terms of your first question. And from when, as I was saying, from when we took over the IBA, and surely at the time there were challenges. And when we merged IBA and SATRA, I think IBA was clean, and it was at the level where, in actual fact, SATRA was looking up to IBA in terms of setting up system policy frameworks and being able to operate a smooth organization. And the year you referred to, which was the unfortunate last year of my two terms, I think it was informed by quite a number of challenges, some of which are still subject, I understand, of a process with the police in terms of the then CFO. I'm not sure how far that process is. And the other matter was the as a result of the actions that were at the CEO level, which led to the actions that we took from that responsibility, that fiduciary responsibility that we had as a council. So I would say it's an unfortunate experience, but we were able to act in terms of our fiduciary responsibilities, and those actions were publicly known. Unfortunately, our terms could not be extended. We could not take third terms, so we had to leave to the new leadership to resolve the challenges. I think the challenges of ICASA at that PFMA context are not, again, unresolvable challenges. I think there was a lot of corrective actions that were taken, which surely I assume that this year they should have been able to correct those. But I would add in answering that by also saying I'll be back here in September, and I can tell you now that my report will be clean.
the MDDA one.
I'm answering your question in terms of you were saying how would I then get your confidence in terms of those issues of governance and PFMA. So I'm saying that would be another additional proof that one is prudent in that regard. Your last question, my understanding of public broadcasting is that leads to that the challenge of public broadcasting is to make strike a balance. The commercial interests that you're talking to have to be balanced with the public interest, and if that balance is strike, you would realize that we're not at opposite ends in terms of the mandate of the MDDA vis-a-vis the interest of a public broadcaster, though it's different levels. Ours is broader beyond just the public broadcaster. It's diversity in all respect. And then public broadcaster will be its focused public broadcasting service interest. The revenue streams, I'm arguing that we do need to increase the public funding of a public broadcaster. So therefore, I don't think necessarily they will be affected by diversity. If we agree that for them to be a public broadcaster, we do need to make them rely partly on some public funding as opposed to relying on the advertising cake that may unfortunately and inevitably lead to them having that kind of programming that is driven from serving those interests of that particular stream. So with that, then surely the community broadcasting is also not tapping that big mark in terms of that advertising cake, and the commercial broadcasting would be the key line from that advertising cake. So that diversity with the different funding models, I don't think it would lead to one of the three categories suffering. I think if the balance is strike, all three categories would survive. And therefore, I wouldn't see a contradiction from a board perspective and a board interest.
That's a science. Let me put it this way. I'm just trying to think that what do scientists do? With all the knowledge and skill acquired and just abandoning them like that. I'm guilty with myself, you see. So I did a lot of such stuff in my previous life, but ended up doing metallurgy, the rocks rather than me. But you directly, human beings, you see, physiology and all the issues that you did. Dr. Gulube, also come here. I'm just trying to think, to check, just create this cobweb in my own mind, what's happening to scientists? Is it not an attractive sexy field anymore?
Not necessarily, Chair. I think we're applying the skills in any sphere. I think a good scientist should be able to apply those scientific skills in every respect of life. And the communications life does require that scientific analysis.
Shouldn't
you
be a
smart
teacher?
No. At least I was asking that question for myself. Okay, in politics you can apply those scientific methods as well.
Can I do a follow-up?
You want to do a follow-up? Okay, do that.
Now, this balance that you're talking about, community, commercial, I'll also have stroke subscription
and public. Look, the environment we are operating under is such that the airwaves have been liberalized, and therefore SABC operates in a competitive environment. Even these community radio stations operate in a competitive environment. They've got to pay salaries and all of that. Now, hence, you have this PSL thing. So I'm saying that there would come a point. See, here you've got public and commercial interest colliding. And you will have commercial and community interest as well colliding. And where would you stand on that?
I think again, if you look back from the act, the policy framework, I think it's clearly outlined in the 1999 act that the broadcasting system at large has got the responsibility as a system to meet all the obligations that are expected by the South African citizenry, and hence the duty to ensure that all three categories survive and be part of the broadcasting system. If you were to then from there look at what's happening in real terms, there are a number of areas where, for example, there isn't a choice for citizens. They would be having one or two services, whether it's public broadcasting or commercial. And by so saying, I'm trying to show that there is space. There's a lot of space in the country that has not been covered, either by public broadcasting or commercial or community. There are citizens who do not have access to information, even though our constitution provides for that noble imperative, but there is quite a number of our citizens that do not have that. So I think, therefore, there remains that space that would need to be kept, both by SABC, by commercial, by community, which will not necessarily provide immediate conflict. But I think with the growth that is taking place, surely even the market itself is becoming dynamic and impose the challenges that would need pragmatism from all three spheres. Inevitably, there will be that competition for that market cake. But I think it would be if we spread well throughout the country with all the other integrated activities, economic development activities, which will support even elsewhere, there is going to be a peace for everyone. I think that's what in the nutshell one is saying. The sports broadcasting, I think it's a matter that's still under discussion, but there is the regulatory framework again that exists. Of course, it is subject for a review now. I think when we prescribed that regulation, we did indicate that in 3 to 5 years we need to review it. And perhaps the lessons that have been learned in this respect would require that very thing that we're discussing at that very time, whether to leave it the way we had left it, was it enough, or should it go further to avoid some of these experiences that we've had. I think that is a subject that probably CASA would have to deal with as it reviews this post-broadcasting regulation.
My question, I'm sure you can see that it has not been answered. You gave me a partial response.
You want to pursue that?
Because my question is, where would his heart lie, okay, in an instance where there's a contradiction in terms of your mandate as the board member of the SABC in terms of revenue generation and so on, and also as the CEO of MDDA, who must make sure that the community sector thrives where will his heart lie? That's, and I'm sure what you're talking about has got nothing to do with my question.
Can you then read it?
My answer is directly responding to that. The mandate of the MDGA is the promotion, encouragement of media development and diversity at large. So you do have to strike the balance in terms of ensuring that.
Here you've got an advertiser who's coming to say, I've got this contract that I want to sign to advertise Coca-Cola, just make it an example. They come to you and say, SABC, community radios, where would you take them to? No, I'm just checking with you.
They come to me as the CEO of MDG.
They come to you.
You are a CEO and a member of the board. You are a member of the board and you are a CEO as well. They want to either or.
Yeah. Chairperson, I think we need to understand the different roles.
We do.
We do. They wouldn't come to a board member for that. They would go to the team that is selling the SABC product.
But they come to you knowing that you're a board member and a CEO of MGT and say, give us a chance.
I would refer them to the team, the selling team, for the SABC option. I would give them the fact that SABC has this listenership and this viewership, but go and discuss with that team. And also give them the information that we do also have a community broadcasting sector, which is spread throughout. It depends your targeted audience, and therefore, for that, go to that forum that deals with that in terms of community broadcasting.
So you won't take decisions, you just send them off.
I'll send them to the right place to take the decision.
Okay.
Mr. Mjinda, I think the seriousness of the matter, the fact that the telecoms companies, because of their licensing condition, they contribute towards Universal Service Fund to assist the under-service area licenses to operate. Therefore, the broadcasting institutions like SABC, MultiChoice, are also contributing to a fund to fund media and development and diversity. They would come up wise. Because they are arguing now that they should not be putting money. They subject to the fact that we are making them to put money to for emerging competitors, and they're having a problem to keep on funding if we are going to be funding a community radio television in particular. So there is that issue now. The question basically is about the code of good practice. What would then happen to you in an event in which the SABC itself board decide not to continue to fund developmental programs around development, media development and diversity? I think that's the crux of the matter. What would you then do in terms of good code of practice and stuff like that in relation to where would your heart lie? I think basically that's the essence of where we want to check. When we take a decision, we should not necessarily discriminate against the basis of our own perception on what could happen in a situation of a conflict of interest, where it could arise in terms of institutional arrangement. I think that's the point. Thanks.
Thanks. I think the question is more clearer now. In terms of the example you're making, and I think the legislature has made the life easier, because up until now, in terms of those contributions, they were on the basis of that negotiated settlement. Up until July 2006, where then the Electronic Communications Act came in, and then it imposes some obligations as opposed to relying on that negotiated settlement. That's one answer, which therefore answers part of your question. But in terms of other examples that may arise, I think in a professional environment, you always have to be clear professionally in terms of what you're dealing with. To the extent where you are conflicted, if that arises, and where I'm sitting, I don't see a matter that would be a conflicting matter between MDGA and SABC. But if such arises, I think the law provides for a mechanism that would enable you to then not participate in that particular matter because of that conflict. And surely that can be 90, even 99% of SABC work. I think that should be maybe one or two matters that may arise in that regard, if they so arise. But from where I'm coming from, I don't foresee them arising.
Let me just push it slightly further for the last time. We clearly don't see where your heart is, where your heart lies. Now you're hiding behind the law, which is a good thing. Now you're an SABC board member. We are amending the ECA, and part of the presentation or input of the SABC is for us to review or to delete that provision of funding for emerging broadcasters. And you're supposed to come and make that presentation. What are you going to say to the SABC?
That's an easier one, Chair, more so coming from where I'm coming from, because I am fortunate to have been an activist for change in this entire media and broadcasting landscape. And therefore, up until now, I've refused to take a narrow interest that serves one particular category. I was coming from a community broadcasting category prior to 1997. And since then, I've always taken decisions in the bigger interest of the broadcasting industry. So what I would say to the SABC in that regard is that it is not going to be in the interest of the public citizenry to not have some form that will assist the goal of media development diversity.
You advise the SABC against it?
I'll advise the SABC against it, but also there's an additional, even business argument that would say, which also answers Honourable Member Kumalo's question in terms of whether does it make business sense to support this growth. And the business argument is that it really does make business sense. In actual fact, most of the broadcasters are tapping on the skills that are generated from this new category. So it does help them to react in this case. It does add value, and I think that's why they see the reason to contribute to the MDGA, because they see that business case as well as the noble case of media development and diversity.
Last question. No, I think you've answered the question. You have lies with diversity. let me take this one. We pay you very well as a medical practitioner, full time, take you away from all these other things, pay you extremely well for the children to eat, to go to school, noting that we have a shortage of doctors, and I'm taking you and Dr. Kulube in this regard, putting you back to Makatiene to practice, but to say you'll be on the SABC board, you know, to do the other things that we invested so much into you and so on. How would you grant that? In other words, medical full-time and these other things part-time, diversity issues, the public service and things like those.
I'm trying to understand the question. If I did not understand it well, really.
No, in other words,
we sharpen your scientific skill in terms of physiology, biochemistry, and do the other things that you are doing in the laboratory when you are still an assistant there. But you put you back to the hospital for it, to do those things, okay, full time. And this one you are doing part time. Is it? And you paid well for the full time job, better than you are paying at the MBTA. It's very much a chance. Oh, it's okay.
There's a similar prayer in God's
name.
Okay. Professor, I think inevitably what this change has done in me is more put my passion on the communication ICT area of work, which fortunately for me, because it's about communications, about content, about information, it does touch areas of health, does touch areas health programming, if you talk broadcasting, or if you talk ICTs, technologies, e-health and so forth. So, in a way, it is kind of a broader interest, which then I try to bring in all my other interests. I've got a lot of passion for rural development, which I try and ensure that we use ICTs to develop our rural landscape. So similarly to health. So a short answer to your question would be, I would still remain in this field and try and use this field, which is communication, to see to what extent do we then upgrade facilities in Kokstad General Hospital using ICTs. I would choose that irrespective of the money you give me, because I think there is long-term benefit with that approach.
Even if we say to you, listen, we're going to ensure that you become a fully fledged medical practitioner, we invest in you again, we're running short of doctors, we've got enough people in the ICT sector. Would you still say the same thing?
Yes, I think ICT does provide a ground that one can use to achieve all the others. If you were to roll out ICT infrastructure and Alfred and Zoe,
you can't develop that. I haven't tried. I've tried to say here that, listen, the country needs doctors, you see. Let's just take these old unpolished diamonds and polish them further and let them shine there. And he says, no, communication. Not even a perfect human can attract Mr. Mpinde to do that. Mr. Mpinde, I'm going to give you... You see, coming all the way up to the BSc level, it's a good entry to medicine, you see. But what's ICT? You can enter from any angle, you see. You can enter from any angle. So there are many people who can enter, even from a legal perspective, from, you know, a political one, from, you know, you can have all these things. But this one is unique. It's not everybody who can go that far. So I was asking from that whether the country is deploying these human resources. Members, before I give this Mr. No, I won't give. Before I'm going to give you a minute just to give you a closer remark. But members, Dr. Roland is here. He has made a special request. I want to announce this when he comes. That says he's asking members to, when you ask questions, just because he's blind, to just, when you introduce yourself, just say whether you're on his right or on his left. In other words, when you're seated there, no, in terms of where you're seated, Mr. Kumar on your left. And then Ms. Smart on my right. You see, that's how it will appear. So I'm just making that appeal. But let's do this. We're going to give Mr. Mtinde a minute just to Mr. Kumalo, thank you. A minute just to say the last word and to wish him good luck and so on. And we take tea and we bring Mr. Dr. Ruland in. I think that when you're talking about change management at the SABC, I was understood about whether you're talking in terms of human resource development discipline or just the change of staff and so on. But I understand you now where you come. You're closing the matter.
Thanks. I would say in closing that we come a long way. Some of you would remember the days when we were making a lot of submissions when I think the chair of SABC was Mr. Christopher Leon, and Venanda Ramsey was the CEO at the time. And we were indicating what you would expect out of a public broadcaster. And a lot has happened since then, and we really see a lot of changes. We are now being faced by a new challenge. There is this new digital broadcasting challenge, electronic communication challenge. How do we make sure that we survive the noble achievement in terms of having a public broadcaster even into the future, into the digital broadcasting future, into the electronic communications environment future? And I think, and not losing the essence of public service broadcasting in the process. I think that's one challenge that we need to look at and ensure that as we shape the future, we don't lose this achievement of having a public broadcaster, because I think the country needs it. I come from an area which I always say it doesn't have television coverage. It has two public radio services, and that's just my area. There's a number of other areas. So there's still a lot of challenges that we face, and I think public broadcasting is an answer, and we should work towards strengthening and protecting our public broadcast. Thank you.
Mr. Mtinde, all of the best in whatever you do, and good luck in the outcomes here, and further good luck in the marriage life. It's a very good life, I can tell you. Keep it that way. It needs to be nurtured from time to time. One wise philosopher was saying it's like fire, you know, made out of wood. You've got to stoke it all the time and ensure that you keep it burning. So that's what I heard some time ago. But good luck, members. We still have them for 10 minutes.
Thank you, members.
I'll check on it.
You know, I just tell you that Don't bring your resources up here in public. Eh? Will you follow?
John, if you can just get Rita for us, please, and one of the comedy sessions, please. And if there are any two members outside there, I think they're still outside, we must proceed.
Okay, are we allowed to see Dr. Rowland outside?
Why not? I'm resentful.
I just want to finish the fire.
I've got to work, can't I?
Yeah, Dr. Sarona is used to the fire.
That's what I can, so you must be careful.
Yeah.
Honorable members, once more, thank you for coming to our last interviewee for the day, which is Dr. Rowland, William Rowland. Dr. Rowland is not new to this process. He has been a member of such boards before. You have interviewed him as well before. So, welcome once more, Doctor. The gentleman next to you, I didn't even ask who the name is, but can I call you, give me a name quickly?
Philip Bam.
Philip, okay. Mr. Bam, you may assist wherever possible there where the gadget is, because we've got two of them there, but Dr. Roland will use the one next to him. If it misbehaves, you just move the one next to it. Doctor, we're interviewing people for the SABC, as you know, for the board membership. It's a very difficult and extensive program that we have engaged. We started this process in April this year, where we gave warning that the term of office for the current sitting board members ends at the end of this year. We agreed with the current sitting members that they will have a handover plan for the new incumbents, who will start their job in January, 1st January next year. But they will have to have a handover plan taking up 2 to 3 months beforehand. So that process is in place and so on. I'm going to ask you just to... My name is Godfrey Wollifon. I'm in the chair now for this process. I'm going to ask you to just introduce yourself. We've got your CV, but please talk to your CV. Tell us what you want us to know about you. That is on the CV or not even on the CV. And then in that same response, you can try to convince the collectors to consider you for appointment as a board member. You have been there before, and tell us what you're going to be going to do there, what that you did not do then, or what is interesting you to go back again to the board of that initiative. Over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity. As you say, you do have my CV. I had a long career as the National Executive Director of the South African National Council for the Blind, and I have had many involvements with the disability movement. I was the first chair of Disabled People South Africa. Many of those people are today in Parliament, and it remains the spearhead of the disability movement in South Africa, and I'm proud to still be their honorary president. So I've had an extensive involvement in the blindness field, in the disability field. And one, I think it makes a mistake to think of that, oh, he's from an NGO background. That is true, but NGOs today really have to be run in a very business-like way. You need to apply and acquire the same skills as you would be running a business or corporation. I am particularly proud of having launched several of the initiatives in the disability field over the years. Perhaps the most interesting one has been the founding of Disability Empowerment Concerns, which, as you see in my CV, is a business initiative on behalf of the disability sector. We own about 22 assets these days, and we are building value. We believe that in time it will be a huge asset for the disability sector and generate funding for them. Internationally, my work is recognized. I am president of the World Blind Union, and I am an advisor at the World Health Organization on community-based rehabilitation and development. I'm on the Global Task Force of the World Bank dealing with disability and poverty. That's a huge initiative. These sound important, but they are not very time-consuming. These are things that you might go to a meeting once or twice a year, and there are plenty of telephone conferences, and we exercise our governance and advice in that particular way. I'm proud of what we've achieved as the National Council for the Blind. I think it was and probably still is a leading agency of NGO in South Africa. It's an organization which we transformed, I would say, at least twice. And we were ahead of the disability field in doing that, in taking race out of the constitution, in opening up services to all groups. The other thing I'm proud of in my disability field is that I was part of the activist movement in the 1980s, when we deliberately set ourselves against the government, apartheid government, because our people were the most affected And in the final years of that engagement, we actually disengaged and set our sights to destroy the disability structures in the country. I don't mean the physical structures, I mean the negotiating forums, the discussion forums with government. We aligned ourselves with the liberation movements, and were recognized as such, so that we were represented at CODESA, for example. So that's my disability background. I'm proud that I've also been seen to have value to add, so that I've served in recent years on several company boards, right now on the National Lottery Operator. I regard myself as expert in the field of gambling and gaming. I serve on the board of a group of financial institutions that have just gained their independence from Nedbank. I represent the disability component, and it is the first black-owned investment company in this country. Not shareholding, but actually owned with the majority of shares. Disabled people have part of that. It's hard to argue why you should appoint me. You've done it once before, I believe that the Mapai board was a high mark in the activities of this SABC. We had certain achievements in that time, also included, just as we came in with the Mapai board, the South African Broadcasting, the Broadcasting Act was coming into force. So I do have that financial, human resources, media experience and knowledge which I gained there, and I found it very rewarding. I have obvious skills in terms of management, finance, investment, human resources, and I would claim some background and experience in media because of my time at the SABC, but also because it remains an interest. Once you're in that field, you keep in touch with it. But I do want to say one final thing. I think there is a good deal of work to be done in disability. I never on the board, and those who remember my presence will acknowledge, I never wanted myself to be seen as a one-dimensional person, only there for disability. I want to be there because of the knowledge and skills I can apply. And so when I was there, I took a particular interest in certain areas of the work. Radio was one of them. It happens that we've got a lot of quality radio in this country, and we should try and keep it that way. Now, on the disability front, I think while I was there, we introduced the disability equity reporting in the board. I don't know whether it's continued, but we were able to monitor very carefully the employment, the adaptation of facilities, because I think it is about equity, it's about programming, and it's about giving disabled people access, not only physical access to facilities, but, for example, deaf people to sign language. Right now, the situation for deaf people is not satisfactory. I believe I can say this on the basis of contact with that community. The sign language on TV3 has been taken away for the news. For SABC 1 and 2, there is still sign language on the news, but use is being made, and this is a cost element, of community signers. And so a lot of deaf people actually can't follow. Now, this is not a word against community sign language interpreters, but these are people that obviously have potential to be trained, but the sign language situation is not satisfactory. Neither is the DTV allocation. Still, after all these years, they have only half an hour. They've won world prizes with drama that they've done. They want to expand that. So I think there is a real opportunity, frankly, without taking away from others, but for increasing the deaf community sense of belonging in our national broadcaster. With regard to blind people, we tend more towards radio, although TV is important to us as well, because we all come from families where TV is watched. I think that it's time for us to start some experimenting with audio description. Audio description has gained a lot of ground and has even become compulsory in certain jurisdictions for a certain percentage, certain type of programming. I think it can be done very meaningfully. We came very close to it, but then I left the board. I hope that in a future term we can address that. So I would like to think that you would look at my skills first, but also acknowledge that I am a recognized representative of the disability sector. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Peterson.
Chairperson, Mr. Rowland, Dr. Rowland, Ryan, the kid is on your left. The man sitting next to Dr. Rowland is as famous or infamous as he is, at least in the Western Cape, full of them, mobilizing the community, especially Mr. Ben, to stand up and do something about the skirts in our society, check and the rest of the drugs. So Dr. Rowland is infamous internationally, I can say. And the last time, I can assure him, the last time that I voted for him to go on the board, it had nothing to do with his disability, but what he could bring to the table. And he didn't disappoint us in terms of that. There was nothing, Dr. Rowland, about your disability. Strange enough, people, when you talk to the average person, when you talk about disability, people kind of narrowly focus to a person in a wheelchair. And they say there's a disabled person, there's also a blind person. So I'm not sure if it's correct or incorrect, but not everybody counts the blind into the disabled group of what in terms of that. So I want to come to my, you know, my question. The NGO, Dr. Rowland, was, and I believe so, is the lifeblood of society, the kind of people, the quality of people they send through. And people getting involved in NGOs, it's about the issues. Very little to do with the money. In fact, there's very little money in NGOs. We still have got mad people go to NGOs, and yet many of us cut our teeth in NGOs. So one is still always grateful for the NGOs and the role they still play in society today. You've touched on it, you like touched on it, and I want it from a blind perspective. If you listen to radio, it's also my first love. I have to choose between radio and television. I prefer the radio, and, you know, being radio junk and channel hopping and all of that. What I've noticed is some of the programs are less descriptive than they were in the past, you know, in the storytelling program, yes, all of that. And that is, for me, the downside of where we are today. It seems as if when they do programs, everybody can read, write, can see, can hear, and it's on that. If we should choose you to come back and be on the board again, how to deal with that? Then, taking in terms of television, I think it's less expensive, the question about captioning. There seems to be, from last time when I heard, there's problems coming from, particularly from America, captioning included. And SAB, for some strange reason, takes it off. They claim that the people that can seek protest because it's distracting them, which is tend to read all of that. I find it more interesting, particularly when I watch the news in other African languages, that runs across of our capturing. That's how I tend to follow it. So how do you see, particularly from a disabled angle, that we start to focus on those things again, because I think it's less expensive and it's achievable within a very short space of time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Before I take your two questions, I just want to respond to your remark about NGOs. We speak today about the third sector, or the social sector of society, and it's a big one. We don't have figures for South Africa, but in the UK, for example, it's just under 10% of the economy. In South Africa, I did some research last year for the School of Business in Soweto. We've got at least 104,000 known CBOs and NGOs. It is a very large sector. With regard to radio, Randy, I don't quite have the difficulties that you do. I think we've got particularly good radio in this country. I would like to see a little bit more drama, and that's probably, I would say, sports broadcasting and in drama, that you need to paint the picture, you know, the old expression of the theatre of the mind. But I think that our radio is, in the main, and there are six, probably pretty good at description. But I would like to always encourage more drama. And I would say, particularly in the various languages of our country, because there tends to be a dominance of English and maybe to a degree Afrikaans at times. We have noticed that the theatre has been, the drama has been increased recently on the Afrikaans broadcasting, which I actually welcome. So it's something I suppose I'll be more watchful of now that you've mentioned it, but I myself travel quite extensively, and by comparison, I would say South Africa has got it particularly well served by its radio media. With regard to deafness, in preparing for my meeting with you today, I did find out some friends and colleagues, not at the official level, but just in the community, to see where things stood. That's based on that I made my initial remarks. I asked one person, or a couple of people in the deaf community, if you were to have just one thing change at the SABC, what would it be? And the unanimous answer is captioning. Now, it can be addressed in various ways. It can be closed captioning so that it doesn't intrude on the general community. But I think two things. I think we must make progress in that area. And I think it's a matter of sensitization and becoming accustomed to it. I think the people that complain about it being intrusive have just not got used to it, or perhaps aren't sensitized to the need. My approach is it's a rights-based approach. Not to the extent that we disadvantage other people, but I think it's a matter of people becoming accustomed to it, of increasing it over time. And I wasn't aware that it was actually taken away on occasions. I think that is a very strange practice and should be discontinued. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further takers? If you sketch the scenario of what you left in the pipeline at the SABC, taking that into account, if you've got to just tell somebody from London or from the UK, for instance, to say, tell us about your public broadcast in South Africa. How would you describe it? General, just a snapshot. As of now. What if I'm again speaking?
Yes, I have now got to know your voice. Well, whether I was speaking to somebody from India or Africa or the UK, whatever it is, I'm very proud of our public broadcaster. One hears constant criticism. Sometimes it's justified. Sometimes it's not. I think even in the UK, the BBC went through a low point in the last 3 years. You would be aware of that. So that any business, any public business, has its ups and downs. But I think that we have free airwaves, and that we've got a strong, powerful, and pervasive public broadcaster, as it should be. The two things that are in the charter,
two of the things emphasized in the charter, are that there must be South African expression and South African identity.
I think that is in the main true of our broadcaster. So that's one element that I'm proud of. I would almost certainly, in speaking with people internationally, refer to our approach to disability as the public broadcaster. And there is some programming, there is some talk show coverage, and of course we have been represented. I think if we have one of us appointed in this board, I think it will be the fourth successive board that disability would have been represented in the board, at all levels. I think we can make progress at the staffing level. I'm proud of some of the appointments in news, somebody like Rulani Baloy, in the sports archive section, in the film splicing section. I don't know whether he's still there, guy with cerebral palsy. So I think these are uniquely South African situations. Not true of the BBC, I know that. So with all the flack that we sometimes take, I would be proud to speak to the broadcaster without denying that there are from time to time obstacles.
I'm seeing two more hands, but yes, I think Mr. Kumalo, Mr. Peterson will come back to you.
Thanks, Mr. Roland, Mr. Kumalo, I'm on your left. Mr. Roland, the mandate of the broadcaster, as we know it, has been to entertain, to inform, and to educate. Our immediate problem is the fact that in terms of programming, there seems to be a lot of violent action adventure movies on the corporation. If you had to go back as a board member, what would you consider to be the proper remedial action to take dealing with the type of violent program that they have? Secondly, from funding. The current funding model of the SABC emphasizes quite a lot of its money come from the advertising. Obviously, we might not propagate it for more state funding, but what do you think would be the most appropriate way to assist the broadcaster so that there is no political or commercial influence in terms of its objectivity? That would be my two questions, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let me start with the funding question, Mr. Kumalo. I think the SABC must maximize all sources of income. And I'm sure it's incumbent on the SABC, from the point of view of the shareholder, that they should maximize, optimize their other sources of revenue. In the main, advertising, but certainly good administration of the licensing, of the licenses, and other products, which I haven't seen recent figures, but I don't believe it's a big source. But all of these sources should be maximized. But it's right and proper that there be a state contribution. It is the public broadcaster, and I think it's a balance and a negotiated balance of those things. I don't have anything very inventive to tell you. I'm sure all your interviewees said the same thing, but I think very seriously that if these sources that are available to us are efficiently managed, plus negotiated appropriate funding from government, it remains a very viable company. With regard to violence, you've made a statement, and one hears this accusation quite often. If I were to address that question, I would first of all want to be sure of the facts. I think one would need some research as to what are we talking about, what do we mean by violence, how pervasive is it, what time of the day is it, what age limits are recommended, and matters like that. Once you've got that, I think we would do well to actually formulate a policy guideline which we would work by. I think the media worldwide today have this element. It's not going to disappear or go away. I think it does play into the negative forces in society, so it's a very important issue. But I'd like to see it approached on a factual basis in terms of a defensible policy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson.
Chairperson, thank you, Dr. Rowland. Again, programming. If you look at the performances, and the good performances, particularly from disabled athletes, and I don't know, just talk about Oscar Pistorius, Natalie, the twins, and all of that. Generally, we had a term or two ago, we had South Africa being world champions in blind cricket. You know, you can go on and on. And yet we don't necessarily see a reflection of those good performances, good outcomes reflected in its progress and all of it. I think you've raised it, you've touched on it in your introductory remarks about GTV, about half an hour and that. And very often in the past we had that even been taken away when we had Formula One racing. You know, that kind of over that all of it. Ads can play a crucial role in terms of the funding. And yet even those ads that have been flighted, is very little of or anything else. I can't remember the chairperson has ever seen disabled people participating in some of those ads as if they're not part of it. You know, surely we need to change that. Surely we need to accept, whether you like it or not, disabled people are human, is part of us, and should be reflected in everything that we do. Being considered. How do you see we address some of those challenges I've just mentioned? Thank you.
Thank you. I can think of examples where disabled people have been included in advertisements. Many people will remember the controversy some years ago between Guide Dog Association and Nando's. I was part of that public debate at the time. In fact, I've never been interviewed so many times in one day as when that confrontation happened. And there have been other positive examples, but not many. But I think it must be done in a way that's not artificial, that seems natural, and then it works and is acceptable for people with disabilities themselves. I think the Oscar Pistorius, the Natalie DeJoyce, and there are several others, have done a lot for the image of disability sport. To me, the big test is going to be the Olympic Games next year. The Paralympics will precede those, and I would want to know in advance what our coverage intentions are. Whether I'm on the board or not, I want to know that, because I think it has become newsworthy. The old argument that the public are frankly not interested is not true. It's less true. There are many people that follow these star athletes, and we all hope our teams are going to do very well. But the recent record has been that our athletes with disabilities have done better against their counterparts, against the world, than our able-bodied athletes have done against their counterparts. So we've got an area of national pride here, and we should be showing that off. I think the Olympic Games is going to be, to me, the big test, and if we do that right, it might just be the platform for better things in the future.
Thank you, Ms. Buck.
Dr. I'm on the right here. I was interested to hear you refer fleetingly to the fact that the Mapaya board is considered to be the high water mark, which happens to be the one that you served on. And I just wondered whether someone watching now from the outside, but with a direct interest because of your past involvement, it may not be a fair question, but if you have a sense of what is going on at SABC now, and you feel that the Mapaya board was a good one, is it at all possible to isolate what the differences are and the causes? What made the Mapaya board a good one? I mean, I have my own thoughts on the matter, of course, but what made it a good one? And in as far as we can all discern from the outside, do you have an idea of what it is that's making this one problematic?
I think you know the answer to that question yourself. Exactly. I'm going to be careful not to make comparisons, but I am going to answer your question. I was careful to choose my words there. I said that the Mapai board was a high mark, a high water mark at the SABC. And I believe it was not universally acknowledged, but that was an image that was sometimes even echoed in the media outside the SABC. Why I think it was a good board, and I've served on the board of the lottery and of certain companies, and it was good in small and big ways. I think it was thorough in its work. It knew the balance between governance and management. So we met regularly, but as necessary. You know, one can have too many meetings. Those are the small ways. Also, I think we were fortunate to hire some very competent people to run the SABC. I don't know what the image is with the parliamentarian, but for us in the board, we had good people that were doing well. It's a large staff. I'm not going to say all several thousand of them could be that, but on the whole, that's how it was. I think, therefore, why it was a good board is there were good people on the board. The board was cohesive. There was a free exchange of opinion. There was a range of opinion in the board, and we often had heated debates. And they would range from the far left to the moderate left. Let's put it in those terms. We would reach consensus. So I think it was a happy board. I would say, because it knew what governance, it knew its place in terms of governance, in terms of systems, in terms of the staff we hired. And for me, the progress we made on disability, I take some credit for us introducing sign language on the news. I brought the deaf people in to meet with Peter Matare and... so that there was that sort of open door approach to disabled people, to the religious communities. And I'm not saying that all or some of these are not happening now, but I think those are some of the things that we did do right.
No, sir. Thank you, doctor. You refer to things that I don't want us to take for granted, like, for instance, to have captioning that is non-intrusive. If you can just explain that concept, because I don't know whether we've got such a thing. I haven't seen it anywhere else. I just see the captions that Randy was talking to. If you can just clarify the non-intrusive one, what does that mean? Accepting the issue, matters of tolerance and understanding that you've raised. But the other one of the audio description, on particularly television and so on, particularly for people who are partially sighted or blind, as to how that will assist. If you can just also just get into that one more, just to make me also understand, and so on. Maybe let me just confine to those two.
Captioning is very common in some jurisdictions around the world. And why it should be particularly problematic here, I think, is that we just haven't sufficiently addressed that. I'm not saying that at the beginning it might not seem intrusive, but I think it is a question of phasing in, making your choices. In any case, we're not going to be able to do everything immediately because the funds simply wouldn't be there. But I think it's a rights-based issue. The deaf people should have that. And if it's done successfully elsewhere, I would use that simple argument that it can be done successfully here. We've got the capacity. Audio description is a very interesting development. I was at a lecture overseas recently where the person who runs an audio description company in the US was in discussion with me, and in fact volunteered his services to South Africa if we ever need that, but when I extended that offer, it wasn't taken up. He played to us an example. I don't know whether any of you saw a wonderful Iranian film in which a blind child is the star. And he played to us a clip where this little child climbs a tree and removes an egg from a bird's nest. Now, if you just listen to the sound, you wouldn't know what at all it was. The audio description was then played, and it's got to be minimal, and so it's got to be artistic and good, and in the mind's eye, the total enjoyment of that episode. Now, it can be done open channel, and it can be done closed channel. I hope you're not going to test my technological knowledge on this, but those are the options, and I think it's time that we did an experiment. My suggestion to SABC last time I raised it with them was, why don't we do a season of, say, 6 films and try it out and get it start discussion in South Africa. It's definitely an idea that I think it's time has come at the SABC as well.
Dr. Earl, thank you very much. I'm going to give you the last word here. In other words, in the next minute, just to give us your closing remarks. But members, after Dr. Roland has left, there are certain housekeeping matters, 2 of them that I want us to dispose of before. Some of you might want to go and join the house. I'm told the recap poll has been debated. But from my side, it was a pleasure meeting you again, Doctor. And secondly, I'm not sure, I'm just thinking here, as you conclude, Braille, documents that are produced in the board. During your time there, was there a struggle? Did you have enough support? Or is it something that we've got also to ensure that we look into if you get appointed to the board? But as you answer that question, please also, it's just your closing remarks.
Let me start with that. Thanks for that question. Those of us who read Braille, and a lot of blind people don't, it is our literacy medium. And on the board, I constantly complained when documents were sent out right before the meeting, and even worse when they were handed out in the meeting. And then one day Dr. Mapai Vincent said to me, how are we going to solve this problem? And they helped me to acquire something called a Braille note. And since then, on the boards I serve, I get my documents electronically and I can read them before and in the meetings. I'm on the Council of the University of Johannesburg. The secretary converts everything into Word. She emails it to me and I read it like anybody else. Today it's easy. There's a little bit of will. It can be done. My final remarks, I think the SABC must act true to its charter in terms of its South Africanness, in terms of its independence, balance and objectivity and diversity. I am allowing myself to be nominated, and I was actually invited by various people to put my name forward. I reviewed my program, and it happens that you see quite a busy CV there. Some of those commitments are coming to an end. My term of the World Blind Union runs out within the next year. I'm standing down at the South African Library for the Blind next month. And so my time is being freed up. I like to be active. I like to be busy. And if that work can be at the service of the SABC and South Africa and my fellow disabled people, that would be a great honor. Chair and friends, thank you for the opportunity of talking with you.
Dr. Roland, thank you very much and good luck. We should be finishing the whole process before the end of September, hopefully. Thank you very much. Dr. Baum, keep up the good work. Okay. Members, just two minutes quickly. On Friday, you'll receive the programs for Friday, Tuesday, next week, and Wednesday. Just quickly, on Friday, we're doing Ms. Mushala, Musafunde, Pepper Green, and Konza. Those are the four that we do on Friday. And then, I won't read out the list, but the list will be given to you for Tuesday. We are doing, let me just go, Tikam G, Takula, Jinwala, Juden, Golding, Howard, and Bengu. They will still to be confirmed. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Tuesday. We might just do 6 if the last one is not confirmed yet.
Yeah.
And then on Wednesday, Lunga, we are doing Mr. Chume. You must just write Mr. Chume properly there. Shongwe, Memani Balani, Gulube, and Miss Harrison Chinwan. This one we just confirming the venue because we've got to do a telephonic interview. Yeah, no, we're on top of that. Listen, Jimon, we're on top of that situation, so that will be we'll complete. I think this is the last batch. Nobody's left behind here. Okay, so that means next Wednesday we would have completed.
The venue
is room 1 on Friday, which is next door. The venue, all of them is room 1, I think. On Wednesday, we just have to confirm.
Okay.
All right. On the 17th, we're going back to where we started. M46. Now, I received a letter, I just got it now, from the Minister of Communication, and this letter will be copied to you, members. This batch here that we got from public enterprises will also be given to just an update on the Infracom issue. They gave us a copy, but the minister is essentially saying that, I think I must read this one, that amendments to the Electronic Communications Act, I hereby wish to inform you that the following consultative meeting with ICASA, the department, has taken a decision not to continue with licensing of Infracom in the broadband Infracom Bill 2007, which contains a provision that deems Infracom to be granted an individual electronic communications network service license. The preferred approach now is to introduce an amendment to the ECA that addresses the question of licensing public entities. We have held discussions with the DPE, ICASA, and industry at large aimed at limiting the Infracom bill to the establishment of Infracom with a clear and narrow mandate to provide backbone infrastructure. Further to the above consideration, the department has compiled a cabinet memorandum requesting that the ECA be amended to insert enabling provisions for government to invest in strategic infrastructure. Once cabinet has taken a decision on the matter, Parliament will be informed accordingly on the way forward on the proposed amendments. We trust that this will assist us to move forward speedily. Once again, thanks to you and the committee for your leadership. Council Member.
Can
you make copies, members?
Chairman, we obviously wait until we see what we have wording they want to put in for us. But
yeah.
If you put in for us, of course, the ECA already anticipated. It's really hard to then set one plan. And all that went wrong is the minister that he writes. Dear little Mashila sat there and the other committee saying that she had done it, but she hasn't. So we'll see, huh?
But even that was going to be problematic. Mm-hmm. Even that route was going to be problematic. But nevertheless, remember? Okay. I will try to get you something in writing for that, just to go through. I want us to go and listen to the RICA discussion, those who are available, the assembly. The meeting is adjourned.